Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Podcast time. I'm really excited about this one. Gregory Gaudet, very good friend of mine. He was actually the first person on the podcast ever. And this is the second one. If you don't know who Gregory is, sliding away from music. Gregory is an extremely well-accomplished chef. He has been on Top Chef a couple times. He has released a cooking book. He has done so many things in the cooking world as a chef, and he has recently just opened his new restaurant called Khan and is about to open a bar on top of that. This guy is busy as hell, so I feel very privileged that I've been able to sit down with him for just over an hour. Without further ado, Gregory Gaudet.
How are you, brother? I miss you.
I miss you too, man. I bet, like, so I text you just a minute ago, a couple of hours ago, I was like, can we, like, I'm around if you want to do it earlier. And you're like, this is my first day off in 3 weeks. No, I can't. And I was like, dude, I feel you. I am so fucking tired right now. And
have you been on the road?
Oh, dude. Yeah, let me just turn you up 1 second.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Just been nonstop for the last, like,
are you in the States?
No, I'm in the UK.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I got back yesterday. Well, I got back on Friday and then left again and got back again last night. So how are you, man?
I'm doing all right. Everything's okay, hanging in there. The restaurant is going in to be 6 weeks old. We just got a nice little write-up in the New York Times.
No way.
50 best restaurants in the country right now. So that's sick. Nice.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But it's been good. I mean, it's been a lot of work, but there's a very good reception to it all.
Amazing. And
it feels good to be open and running after years of planning and construction and challenges with the city on getting all our permits and the space built and all that good stuff. So
let's do a little bit of an update for everyone. If anybody is new onto this podcast, Gregory was the first guest we ever on the podcast, which is kind of crazy because that was like 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
You're going to be like the 130th guest.
Cranking them out.
Yeah, just nonstop. So thank you for being the first guest.
Yeah, and I get to sit amongst the roster of all these legendary DJs who've been on the Will Clark podcast.
You're a legendary chef, let's be honest.
You're a legendary chef.
far from legendary.
I've seen your croissants.
I need to make you some. To be fair, saying that, you also need to cook for me because you've never cooked for me.
I know. When are you coming to Portland?
I know, man. I'm trying to book it in.
Okay.
But
yeah, come and then play in our bar and I'll make you dinner.
Seems like a fair trade off. If you ask me.
Yeah, I definitely like dinner. That's like it's a big miss in our relationship.
I know. I don't actually think you can cook. I think you're a fake chef.
It's all facade.
It is. It's all fake.
Just smoke and mirrors.
But yeah, so a lot has happened in the last 2.5 years. Obviously, COVID happened. You left your job right before COVID, I believe, or maybe like six months before.
Yeah, right before.
Yeah. Opened a Khan to pop up during the COVID, which was extremely successful and sold out pretty much every single table throughout the whole kind of period. You wrote a cookbook. You won a James Beard Award for your cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
You've opened a restaurant and you're about to open a bar.
Yes. A little busy.
Jesus Christ, son, chill out. So I think we caught up in April in 2020.
Just like 1 month into the pandemic.
Yeah. You had an amazing birthday party at the end of the pandemic as well.
Yeah, you flew in just for that.
I flew in for that, which is
honored and impressed and still very grateful for that.
That was fun. That was a fun party. I had a good time. But I kind of want to just catch up with you on everything. And I want to... So, like, the podcast has evolved more and more into, like, getting to know people and how careers started. And I think we kind of did a bit of that on the first podcast. But I really want to go into, like, some more depth of what your life is like and how deep you have to go into to kind of run everything on what you're doing. You do a lot, and juggling that is a lot. And I think people would be really interested in that side of it. So I kind of want to like start from the book, because you were talking about writing the book then, and I think you'd started.
The pandemic was really when I was like finishing all the recipe testing. So I was actually working out of a friend's kitchen, which is larger than my apartment. And when we went into lockdown, I just had to finish recipe testing at my house. So when we spoke, you know, I think I turned everything in November of that year.
Yeah.
So we had a few more months of recipe testing and planning, and then we went to editing. Mm. And then the book came out in 21. So, but, you know, I mean, I think just generally, I feel like there's so many things you can do as a chef, you know, I mean, I just like with a lot of our professions and the paths that we choose, there's so many things you can do.
Yeah.
Like even as a DJ, you can perform, you can write, you can produce, you know, there's so many avenues that we can take with our art and our profession. So totally. Writing a book seemed like something natural. It wasn't an idea I had for a long time, but I just was inspired by a couple of colleagues to write the book.
Yeah.
And for me, the book was, I really wanted to write a book that helped people eat better. Mm-hmm. So the book is, it's super allergen friendly. It's a health book. It's a health book disguised as a regular cookbook, honestly.
Okay.
And it taps into global cuisines from all across the world, including my Haitian heritage. And, you know, I worked in Pan-Asian concepts for quite some time. So driving inspiration from those influences.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked in French kitchens. I've worked in Spanish kitchens, you know, tapping into the broader Pan-Caribbean diaspora as well, which is, you know, inspired by where I'm from in Haiti, where my family's from. So the book draws on all different cultures from all around the world. And it's written for home cooks. So if you're an adventurous home cook, it's like the perfect book for you if you're just trying to eat a little bit better.
It's an amazing book. I'll be honest, I still haven't cooked anything from it because I suck. Because I suck as a friend. But I've got a copy and I've read it. Like, I've gone through it multiple times and I've caught my housemates going through it lots. It's like a really interesting read. It's not just like a recipe book, which I find really interesting. With the process, like, how many recipes do you have to make to get into the into it? But,
well, the book actually grew. It's 200 recipes, but I think when you're a chef and you are used to cooking in a restaurant and you have like a team and you have all these resources at your fingertips, it's a lot easier to, you know, make super complicated food or, you know, you just go a little bit above because people are coming for a dining experience and, you know, they're expecting something elevated or complex. So for a home cook, you know, you don't want to be, you know, cooking a million different things just to create one dish. So, you know, in my head, I create a dish. I have a sauce. I have a protein. I have a vegetable. Maybe there's a pickle. But so the book grew because we simplified. We tried to simplify all those recipes. So it actually ended up being 200 recipes. And it's broken up into 14 chapters. You know, and there's seafood. There's meat. There's birds. There's eggs anytime. There's soups. There's three vegetable chapters. There's pickles. There's sauces. There's desserts. So it's like really broken up into different categories that are easy to flip through and figure out.
Because I like, will you tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like there's a lot of cookbooks that actually aren't written by the chef.
So, I mean,
or is that like a controversial thing that we shouldn't talk about?
I think there are, if you're like a really, really famous celebrity chef, like you have a team that's working on your book, like 100% for sure. You know, but I am just a normal person. So it's, it was a very, very personal project. So for me, you know, I worked on all the recipes myself. You know, I mean, we had a pretty big team because it's a pretty big book, but I mean, like, you know, I would say someone like Chrissy Teigen probably has a team that's helping her like write her book, but like someone like me, you know, it was a very personal project.
Well, it makes sense.
That's why there's so much.
It makes sense because it's the same in music. When the big, the bigger you get, the less likely you're going to be writing your own music, purely because it's just a time thing, if I'm honest. And I think the, like, let's be honest, David Guetta doesn't write his records, in, but he's has to be in like three places at one time. So it's, I kind of understand that. I want to talk on like a therapeutic level, like during the COVID, how was it stressful writing the book, or was it something that like really helped you just kind of escape from the mundane life of COVID?
Yeah, I mean, at the top of 2020, you know, I quit my job in 2019 and I was about to go travel. I had, you know, I was planning on taking the year off to, to travel and start working on the restaurant. And I was going to go to Haiti. I was going to go down south and, you know, like study American barbecue. I wanted to go up to the Northeast and like study American seafood because like all those things are represented in what we do at the restaurant. But, you know, I was just locked down at home with everyone else. But I mean, I feel like that was the opportunity where I was able to really dive into the books, especially as someone who cooks in a restaurant, like chefs don't really cook at home a lot, unless you probably have a family. But like, you know, like a bachelor like me, you know, like I never really cooked at home, but like the pandemic, you know, made us all cook at home. So I was actually like meal prepping and, you know, it helped me fine tune these recipes because I was actually cooking at home for the first time really in like many, many years since I started working.
Is it a thing being a chef that by the time you get home, you don't really want to cook for yourself?
I mean, it depends, you know, like I get home at like 1 a.m, you know, so I, you know, I really definitely don't want to cook. but at the same time, you know, if I have a lot of free time, I like, it's easy to meal prep.
Yeah, I guess this is, I don't know about you, but like when you have time off, like, do you like to be cooking? And like, if you got friends over, or like when you're socializing, do you like to be the cook, or do you actually like to like step back and not do it because it's your job at the end of the day? And like, like, let's be honest, you're a great chef, but it's similar to me to a certain extent. It's like, do I really want to be working? Like, do I want to go to a club on my night off? 100% not. Like, you would not, unless a friend is playing, you would not catch me at a club, like, on a night off.
Yeah, I mean, that seems very interesting. But, you know, I mean, I enjoy cooking. It comes very naturally.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, if someone else wants to cook, that's really great. But it's like, it's like very naturally, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but like, if you're like, you know, behind the decks and you're hanging out, like, you know, you drop a couple tracks, you know what I mean? Like,
totally. I think, I think like, honestly, like, brutally honest, if I had a night off, I would not really want to go to a club.
Yeah.
Only because I think the thing is, I have this weird relationship with venues, is that like, I love DJing and I love performing, but my first ever experience in a club was me DJing. It wasn't me going to raves and partying. So I kind of never really had that like rave thing. Whereas if someone cooks for you, do you judge them?
No, not at all. I just appreciate it.
What?
I mean, if they want feedback, I'm happy to give them feedback. But I mean, for me, I don't judge them, but I mean, if something needs a little seasoning or needs a little salt, like, I get it. I put quite a few things in my mouth, you know, like, I'm good, you know, like.
I wouldn't shout about that too much.
Just the act of someone cooking for you is a gift. So if anyone cooks for you, you should just appreciate it. So when someone cooks for me, you know, especially, you know, someone who's not a professional cook, of course I appreciate it, you know?
Yeah. But if it's bad, you're going to tell them, I hope.
I wouldn't break their heart. If they wanted feedback, I'd be happy to give them feedback.
I don't know, because if I cooked for you, or when I cook for you, I want you to like be brutally honest.
Yeah. But you know, you have that relationship with certain people, you know, and like when I cook for you, I want you to be brutally honest too. I mean, I'm, as a chef, I'm always looking for feedback. Whenever people come in to eat, you know, like, I want critical feedback, you know, and I think sometimes people are scared to give feedback, or sometimes people don't really want to hear feedback, but I actually do want to hear feedback, you know? Because I always think there's different perspectives on what people see in a dish or how it tastes to them. And, you know, if I make something, that doesn't mean that it's perfect every time, or that it means that someone connects to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it does, but it's just interesting and cool to hear what people's perspective is on food. And, you know, is it too spicy? Is it seasoned? You know, there's all these nuances that people pick out, which I think it's very interesting to know.
Yeah, I guess it's really interesting. It's because I think food is such a personal thing, right? So like, what's something might taste so different to you than what it does to me. So it kind of, is it really hard to kind of take feedback? Not hard to take feedback, but like hard to like, how do you like process that in a way where you can take the feedback and then make the dish better? Or do you necessarily listen to the feedback? Obviously you listen to the feedback.
Yeah.
But like,
I mean, I think we live in a world where reviews are a huge part of what we do. Mm-hmm. So even if we want feedback or not, like, we're going to see reviews. I get reviews in my inbox every morning from like the night prior.
Really?
So I'm constantly getting people's feedback, and you know, there are multiple other platforms, be it, you know, Resy, which don't use, you know, Yelp, like Google, you know, people are leaving reviews every single day. So I read that, but you know, reading that, you know, I don't have an ego around my food whatsoever. You know, I think it's very important. If multiple people are saying, or all the food is spicy, then I would probably take a look and, you know, maybe try to reduce the spice in one or two dishes. Yeah. You know, that's not really the case. We've had like a couple people say it's like way too spicy. So I'm not changing anything.
They're just weak.
But, you know, but also like, you know, if something becomes a favorite, you know, everyone's talking about a specific dish, you want to keep that dish on the menu.
Totally.
You know, because obviously it's a fan favorite and people want to come back to that. So maybe that's something you consider keeping on the menu. So for me, I just think it's just a way to get better, you know, and to improve, because at the end of the day, you know, I can create something, I can consider myself an artist, and I can make food with my team. But really, it's really about the consumer and the guest who are going to be spending their money on that item. And if they don't want it, they don't want it. You know,
it's really interesting you say that, because I have that same feeling with music. Although I create a record, the minute it's out, it's not mine. It's the universe's, and it's down for people to enjoy it or not enjoy it. And if they do enjoy it, then it will kind of convert into people coming to my shows or streams or buys or whatever, or it won't. At what point in your career did you get to that point where you were like, where the ego goes and it's purely positive each time you read a review or listen to feedback or something like that? Because I don't think that's a thing. I don't know. It could have been for you, but I don't think straight away for me, I always kind of struggled with feedback to a certain extent, but it took me a while to kind of get there.
Yeah, I mean, I think feedback is just a part of life. I think it's just like, again, like when we talk about the ego, you know, I think it's just like just being open to other perspectives and perceptions of you. You know, I think especially when you're in a position of leadership, it's like extremely important for you to be able to listen to what other people think of you, especially if you're telling people what to do all the time. Or people are relying on you for information, or, you know, for part of their career, you know, so, you know, you have to listen to what other people are saying to truly lead, you know, because you can't lead just what you want. You have to lead what the collective conscious is. So, I think for me, you know, I mean, I think there's a couple things, you know, I think being like on a show like Top Chef or like on these competition shows where you're constantly being judged, you know, it's nothing personal. It's just, it's about the dish. It's about the food. So, and then, you know, those reviews are real, you know? So, I mean, and if you're constantly trying to get better and be better and have a broader mass appeal, which is something that I strive for, because, you know, I have a big restaurant, you know, I need to keep all those seats filled. You know, we have lots of different type of guests. So it has to be, the food and the experience has to be something that pleases lots of different types of people.
Yeah.
So we can stay busy and stay profitable.
Makes total sense. If you're a chef coming up underneath you in your restaurant or something like that, how does it work with people making dishes or kind of coming up with ideas and kind of developing dishes for the restaurant and for you as a chef?
So the menu development process is oftentimes it just starts with me and the ideas that I want on the menu. Usually it starts with a vegetable or protein. It's like, hey, I want to do red cabbage, or I definitely want to do chicken, or I definitely do want to do a beef rib. Let's do a whole fish. Watermelons in season for a few months, let's crush watermelon.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of thinking about what goes with those ingredients in a different way. There always needs to be a cultural perspective. And then usually what happens at that point is after there's like a kind of a blueprint of what these dishes are, we go into recipe testing, and that's when it's dispersed with the teammates and my chef team, and they start working on the different parts. You know, like we have this one dish, which is a butterfish dish, which is walu. It's a Hawaiian fish. It's really fatty. We just sear it on the outside and serve it with grilled smoked pickled cucumbers. And then a spicy watermelon juice, and then we freeze half of the watermelon juice and shave it on top. But that's just something that was like in my head, and that dish was a lot of different things before it became that. But my chef Aranya, she's the one that recipe tested the entire thing. You know, so I just wrote down a few notes on what we should do.
Yeah.
She worked on it. It didn't work out. And then she came back and she's the one that actually developed like the exact recipes for those. So that happens throughout the team quite a bit.
And how long does that take roughly? Like obviously from concept with you in your head to a piece of paper to then actually going on the menu, like how many times does that have to be made and tested before it actually goes out? Or is it literally a same day thing where you're like, fucking let's crack on?
Yeah, I mean, some things take quite a bit of time, honestly, because there are so many variables between like making something once, you know, and then having to make something like 40 times a night and what that system looks like.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can make something once and it's very easy, but when you scale something and you do the recipe times 20, you don't necessarily have to scale all the ingredients. It's like this weird thing where like some things are off. You know, can you mix it the same way? Like, is it going to take too long to process it with like a certain tool? Do you need to use a different tool? Because instead of like 1 pound, you're now making 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Does that change the texture? So there's like all these variables of making something once and then making something like 40 times a night, which we have to at the restaurant. Mm. So that can take quite a few weeks. You know, that butterfish dish itself, it was like one of the last dishes that we figured out, but like people love it. It's a signature dish right now. Mm. But that definitely took, I would say, about 3 weeks before we got it right.
Is that 3 weeks of having it on the menu and still tweaking it, or 3 weeks of like until it's on the menu?
No, 3 weeks of just like making it like every couple days and going back to it.
Yeah.
And then there's other dishes, like we have a brine chicken dish that took quite some time because, you know, we're brining chickens and there's a salt ratio involved. We brine them and then we dry them and then we grill them. So it's like this multi-day, multi-step process. It takes 3 days to make each chicken.
Wow.
So within that, you know, if one day it's too salty, or the next day it's not seasoned enough.
Yeah.
One day it's sticking to the grill. There's all these variables that you play with, but it still takes 3 days to make each chicken. Mm. So it's just about that process of being able to start over and just keep going and then finally getting to the final product, which we have now, and it's money. But again, that took quite a few weeks to figure out.
And are you writing all of these down, or is it something that's like in the head?
No, we write everything down.
Yeah.
So we measure everything by the gram. We measure salt. We measure cooking time.
Yeah.
We have everything like by the gram, weighed out, scaled. So everything is exact. Everything is consistent.
Yeah.
Especially if we're making something 40 times, you want every single person who has it to experience the same thing.
Totally.
Then you also want the system to be as clear as possible, because if different people are making it, you want them all to just have like the blueprint and the recipe to be able to follow it and make it perfectly every time.
Yeah. Would you ever release those recipes into a book?
Like the restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, I'm actually quietly working on my next book. We're like kind of like throwing ideas around. Yeah. But gotta stay busy. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's going to be another book designed geared to home cooks, but I know it will feature a lot of the recipes from the restaurant.
Yeah.
In a home cook friendly way. Mm. Because the flavors are just so good. And, you know, I mean, there's like, you know, people like you who are like really, really good non-professional cooks that are excited by different cultures and different ingredients. And the book is really geared towards those folks. I think I'll try to scale it back even just a little bit and have a broader range of easier recipes, because I do believe we're so busy, especially in like the normal world where you have a partner or you're married or you have kids, people kind of want to get dinner on the table a lot faster.
Totally.
So that's the focus of book number two.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think I have this recipe book from a restaurant called Dishoom, which is like a famous Indian restaurant in the UK. They have like three locations in London.
Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah. It's pretty good. But their book is like, it's not massive. Like there's not loads of recipes, but it's all based on what they sell in the restaurant. But it's also a lot of it is like a story behind each dish. So I guess that kind of fills the book up into something a little bit more special, where I think you're getting a trimmed down version of the menu. And of course it's like, you're not adding as much as seasoning as they would in the restaurant. It definitely doesn't taste like what it does in the restaurant, but it's still a very close, like, replica of what you're getting in the restaurant, which I really like, because it kind of shows you the process of how they do it in the restaurant, which is really interesting. It's a really good book, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Really good book. I want to go to opening your first restaurant, from concept to now, where you've been open a couple of months, I believe.
Six weeks.
It's crazy. How? Let's go back to concept. We spoke about this a couple years ago on the podcast, where you wanted to start your own restaurant eventually after doing a bunch of research and traveling and doing mm-hmm. all of that. Obviously, you couldn't do any of that, or you couldn't do any of the traveling. What's the process of opening a restaurant?
I mean, it was a lot. It was a lot. You know, so 4 years ago, I started looking. I was working with like a restaurant group, and I had talked to them. Things were going really well with all of us, and I had talked to them about maybe partnering with them. So that was in discussion. I was looking at all these different areas, you know, and I was actually looking at downtown. But downtown Portland has been ravaged by the pandemic, so that was, you know, something that was a bull I dodged for sure. But, you know, we didn't find our restaurant space till last summer. Mm. So, you know, I knew that it was going to be a big push, but we definitely wanted to open this year. We were trying to open in the spring. So first it was a huge push to raise the money, which was like the biggest part, because you can't do anything without money.
And how do you do that? Like, I kind of want to go a bit more into the process, so it's rather than like surface level. Like, how do you mm-hmm. raise the money for a restaurant? Like, I don't have a clue, and I'm sure most people don't have a clue.
Well, so the first thing that we did was we had our pop-up in like winter 20 to 21.
Yeah.
So that was 4 months of a pop-up, and all that money we saved, all the revenue from that we saved, and we invested that into all the kind of earlier starting things that we needed to get done to start the restaurant, like hire the lawyers, you know, sign the lease, mm-hmm. pay first month's and last month's rent, that start paying some of the construction costs, the designer fees. So that's where that all started. You know, luckily, I've been in the community for quite some time. I have some really good friends. I've been talking about opening my own place for some time. So I had a good amount of people who had offered to invest without me even asking. Mm-hmm. So that was like a huge piece of it. And that was extremely helpful. And then a couple things happened. So we raised a bunch of money really soon. And then a few things happened. I had one investor back out last minute who was going to invest quite a bit, and cost just literally skyrocketed.
Yeah.
You know, the reality of the amount of money that we needed to raise almost doubled over mm-hmm. the course of the next few months. So that is what sent me into a little bit of a scramble in terms of being able to find money. So there was quite a bit of money to have to figure out. And it's really about thinking about who's in your network, what type of investors you want. You know, I want to be in full control. I want this to not be like, I wanted to keep it in the family, you know, mm-hmm. at some point. So the people that I reached out to were people who believe in the project, you know, and I think that's the biggest piece, you know, because this is like a very, very personal project. Restaurants are extremely challenging. A lot of restaurants don't make any money whatsoever.
Yeah.
It's a huge risk. So you really need people who believe in you, mm-hmm. you know, and I was able to find people who believe in me. And they know that I'm going to work my ass off to try to make this restaurant as successful as possible. You know, because on paper, it might not look great to invest in a restaurant at the end of the pandemic in Portland, Oregon, you know, does not sound like a sound business adventure. But, you know, but if you know me, if you like really know me, you know, I'm going to work my ass off to make anything I touch successful. And those are the people that I was able to find. You know, I mean, I hit up friends, you know, people have been burned by the pandemic, and they're like, hey, nope, I'm never investing in a restaurant ever again. You know, and they were yeah, they were very honest with me. Or, you know, I'm selling my house, or I just can't do anything with the money right now. The stock market is weird. We're going into a recession. Yeah. Like really, really close friends that I hit up told me all these things. Yeah. And I just went to the next person. And then we finally got funded. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it truly was like the Black community that came through for me. And like, you know, our last investors are all investors of color because they believe in the mission behind the restaurant.
I love that.
You know, that's, you have to find people who believe in you more than they believe in the project.
100%. 100%. Because realistically, it's you're driving the project, right?
Yeah.
It's nobody else. It's you. And it's all down to you. How much pressure is that though? Because like, that's a lot of pressure.
I think once you're over the hump of them saying we believe in you, you know, then that's it. Because, you know, I had people say they believe in me, but they can't sign this agreement, you know? So it's like, you don't actually believe in me if you're not willing to invest in me, you know? Like if you say you believe in me, then you invest, you know, so don't tell me you believe in me, but you don't really want to invest in the restaurant. So it's about finding the people that are just, hey, I'm here for you, whatever you need. I'm going to help you till the bitter end, you know? And, you know, I'm just happy that we have a beautiful, busy restaurant for our investors to come to. And you know, they've just all been extremely great and extremely supportive, and, you know, they're very close friends at this point. And, that's a relationship that I wanted, you know?
Yeah, totally. That makes sense. Totally. So we get the money, construction hasn't started yet. What's the next step?
Construction started right away. So that was probably the biggest piece. So the group that we work with, the landlord, he has a full-time construction team. He's done multiple restaurants in the city. So that was like the first piece. Like you just have to get construction going or else you'll never open on time. And especially during the pandemic, you know, when there's like, you know, supply chain crisis, you know, supply chain crisis, there's a lack of workers.
Yeah.
You know, people are out with COVID. You know, there's a million construction jobs that are not getting done. So we felt extremely lucky that we were able to have the team that we did because they were able to just keep going. You know, we had construction team going 6-7 days a week, you know, 12 hours a day. We were extremely resourceful, you know, with like the supply chain demands that we had. We were able to just be very upfront with people and be like, hey, can you do this in this amount of time?
Yeah.
You know, and is the answer yes? Can you provide these products, these supplies, these materials in this amount of time? You know, and people could, and some people couldn't, and we worked with them, and some people couldn't, and, you know, and we didn't work with them, but we had to be extremely aggressive. You know, I mean, the other piece of it is, you know, permitting around this country is extremely challenging, especially when a lot of government workers were like working from home. So permitting in Portland is extremely challenging. So, you know, I had to like dive in and, you know, call my congressman, you know, befriend my commissioner just so I can get their offices helping us, you know, with construction permits and all that good stuff. So, you know, once construction is going, it's a million decisions, you know, it's like picking the floor, picking the stone, picking, you know, do you want this curved or do you want this square? All of the design pieces.
Is this literally like an everyday thing? Because I remember coming to the restaurant before. You'd done a lot, but there was still lots to go, and it felt like a huge project you were kind of taking on, which obviously is a huge project. But like, is it something that where you have to be in every single day, like watching everything, working on everything, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, luckily, you know, I had, you know, Tia, who's, you know, my biz partner and project manager and best friend. She knows me really, really, really well.
Yeah.
So she was on the ground every day, and I was able to kind of like do meetings and kind of like do a couple trips that I still had to, but no, it's 100% every single day, because every single day there's a million decisions being made, from the plumber deciding like where all the, you know, drains need to go, to like the lighting, which took weeks and weeks and weeks, and just deciding like you know, all the lighting. There's lighting in the ceiling, there's lighting under the counter, there's lighting in the kitchen, there's can lights, you know, there's design lights, you know, so like all these decisions takes time, tons of time. And our space was completely empty. There was literally nothing there, you know? So we had to build everything from inside the walls to out, just from inside the walls to everything on top of that.
I guess that's a nice thing, that it's just a blank canvas, that you can literally work with anything with a blank room, and you don't have to worry about, there's no like limitations. However, you've got to build everything.
Yeah. I mean, the limitation was, you know, can we get these materials in time?
Yeah.
And what happens when we need more tile and there's no more of that tile?
Yeah.
Because that's the last of it. Or, you know, we've purchased all this, this specific material, you know, we've purchased all of it that's in the country. What do we do now? We need more.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that we had to face and figure out.
Crazy, man. So construction started, permitting's done. You get to a point where you have a finishing date to open.
Oh God, the finishing date? that was a moving target for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, we're supposed to open in March.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like the loftiest goal.
Yeah.
You know, and that was even before we started construction. So, I mean, I think the last realistic day we had was May. It was May, and then it was June, and then it was July, and then it ended up being August. So I think, you know, 3-4 months behind is not like unrealistic pushback. You know,
it's good. It's pretty good.
I know people that have been delayed for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I mean, we built that place from the ground up in 9 months.
That's mad. And you kept the location a secret for so long.
We did.
What was the reasoning behind that?
It's just, you know, just like a lot of my life is extremely public.
Yeah.
And I feel sometimes that I'm not ready to share things with people. And that's just it. You know, it was a live construction site. We didn't want people just coming by and like nosing around.
Yeah.
You know, it was very tense at times because we were pushing so hard. And it just felt better to just keep things closed and protected.
Yeah.
And it builds up some anticipation and excitement around it as well.
Totally.
I mean, sometimes things are just not ready for the world to see, you know, like it's like kind of like when you produce a track, you know, like you don't release that track till you think it's ready for the world.
I agree, man. And I think in a world where we overshare everything and we're like, I'm happy to be challenged on this, but like I feel like we're expected to overshare, and and potentially people want a lot more of us than what we can necessarily give sometimes. I think it's really important to be able to have something that nobody knows about, and I just think it's just this is, I think there's also a huge part of it, like if I'm working on a project where people don't know about it, it gets me excited, and it allows me time to actually get to a point where I'm really, really happy with it and then I can announce it to the public or announce it to anyone. There's certain projects I'm working on that like literally only like 4 or 5 people know I'm working on. I think it's just like really important, because I think there's also a level of expectation that comes out. And I want to talk to you about how you have dealt with that as well. But the level of expectation that people have and build of you as working on a project, and as, for instance, opening your own restaurant for the first time, doing a cookbook for the first time, you've done all these like huge things in your, that a lot of people would dream of in their career as a chef, and you've done it all within 2 years. How do you deal with the expectations of other people?
I mean, first of all, I have a lot of anxiety in life that I'm trying to manage. But I mean, I think for me, I'm an extremely passionate and driven person, and honestly, I put a lot of critique on myself and I put a lot of judgment on myself.
Yeah.
Not in a negative way, but just in a way that, you know, I have high expectations for myself.
Yeah.
And I want the best for my teams. And I believe, you know, that I have a high level of taste, you know, and I think all these things coming together, you know, like, you know, probably some, I'm definitely a workaholic, which isn't necessarily a positive attribute mm-hmm. or characteristic. You know, I am in recovery, you know, I'm an addict. So like, I still have that kind of like pulsing energy about me, that keeps me extremely driven. I've been able to channel that into good. Mm-hmm. So I think all those things kind of set me up to just always want to dream big, think big, and just work as hard as possible to achieve those goals.
Yeah.
You know, I think the other piece of it is that I 100% realize that nothing in this world comes easy. Mm. And if you want great big things, you have to put in the work, you know, and I've been able to put in the work. I've been able to, you know, surround myself with great teams, and collectively we've been able to work on really big projects, and just like really make magic happen. And for me, I thrive off that. I really do. As tired as I am sometimes, as anxious as I am sometimes, I really thrive off just like the sense of completion. And, you know, seeing something really big scale come to life.
Yeah, well said. I want to go back to the anxiety.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the anxiety? Or how are you learning to deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't have it, like, terrible. Like, I know, like, some people, like, it really stops them in their tracks.
But I also don't think you can compare any of your feelings to somebody else's feelings, because your feel, like, your worst day is the worst day you've ever had. Like, it might not be as worst as somebody else's, but it's the worst day you've ever had. Yeah. So it's like your anxiety is the worst you've ever had it, if you know what I mean, to a certain extent. Yeah. So it's like, how do you deal with it as Gregory?
I'm actually about to start talking to someone about it and seeing if there's some medication I can take. But honestly, like, the first time I noticed having anxiety was like being on Top Chef, and it was going to judge's table. So, you know, I took Top Chef very seriously. I did pretty good first time, second time did pretty good too. Yeah. And, you know, it's like you cook, you go through your mini challenge, your quick fire, you go through your big elimination challenge. And then, you know, it's like that dramatic moment where everyone lines up and you go to judge's table, if you've ever seen the show. And it's like, you've done the event, you've cooked the food. It's like hours later, you know, the judges are all sitting there. You walk into this dark room and you have to face the judges. Mm. And of course, it's, you know, there's a lot of things to set up for TV. So there's a lot of waiting around. It's like, it's extremely dramatic just because that's just the nature of it. Like, there's a lot of waiting and not knowing if you did well or if you're going to go home.
Yeah.
So I just remember being in those moments, or, you know, having the clock start to cook and just having my heart pounding and my heart racing. Mm. And, you know, it's definitely a rush, you know, it's a rush to be able to push through that and to, you know, do whatever you need to do. You know, in those scenarios, it was, you know, cook food and, you know, hopefully win the challenge. Nowadays, you know, with, like, honestly, you know, the reverse of this is having so much on my plate. You know, I just always feel like there's so much to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not scared of a lot of things in life. Like, I'm really not, you know, so I'm trying to figure out like where this anxiety stems from. I think it's just having so much to do and kind of feeling like there's not enough time to do it. You know, I think that's where it stems from. You know, I think it just stems from taking so much on my plate sometimes.
Yeah.
It just makes my heart race very, very fast.
I can relate to that, but I don't, for me, I don't think it feels like anxiety to me. I don't know what it is. But it, for me, it just kind of sometimes just feels like just a lot more pressure. How does anxiety feel to you?
It's just like my heart racing. It's like my heart racing, like really, really fast. For no reason. Like sometimes as soon as I wake up, like,
really?
as soon as I open my eyes in the morning, and just like thinking about everything that needs to get done, or thinking like, you know, something isn't done and someone needs it.
A magazine
needs a recipe, you know, or, you know, something like that.
Does exercise help you? Because I know you got back into it.
It does, but I've been having anxiety at the gym lately, really? Which is very, very odd. You know, kind of like in the middle of that workout, you know, when you're pushing or you're lifting heavy, I've been getting anxious sometimes. Usually I feel great after, but yeah. It's very interesting that that has been like extra hard. You know, I also realize that I'm in like a very heavy patch of my life and career where I have a lot on my plate right now and have a lot of eyes on me. And I have a really huge team that I'm responsible for that I have to look out for and, you know, always make sure everyone is happy and safe. So all this, I mean, I think about all this stuff all the time, you know, it's extremely consuming. So I realize that, you know, I'm at a very, very, very busy patch of my life. And, you know, I think these feelings are not surprising to feel like this right now.
Yeah. I don't disagree with you that they will, I hope they pass as well, because I think this is like, as an outsider, like I totally get that this is like a time of your life that's crazy. I couldn't even imagine the pressure that you're in right now. But also it's like, it's a time to try and enjoy.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Yeah.
You literally like, fuck off, Will.
I mean, you know, I mean, I think for me, I don't know. I think like completing the project is like the most fun for me. You know?
Yeah, but what's complete in a restaurant open? Like, when does your project ever complete? Because
is it December? Is it the first year? You know, I don't know.
But this is the thing, okay? This is, and I think this is like, it needs to be spoke about in all of our industries, because I am exactly the same as you, right? Like, I'll release a record, it will do really well, and then somebody will like, oh, that's done really well. And I'm like, yeah, could have done better. Like, or like, yeah, but hopefully the next one has to do better. I was literally talking, I had dinner with my parents this evening, and it was like, I need to be doing this next year. I need to be doing that in 2 years. But within 3 years, I need to be here. And it's like, fuck's sake, Will. Like, you had your best year so far. Like, why can't you just, like, sit down and just accept it? But there's something in me that can't.
I think we can't not chalk it up to drive and passion. You know, it doesn't have to be, like, this negative thing that we're continuously seeking more. You know, like...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think if at the core, I know that I'm happy with my life. You know, like I'm extremely grateful for everything that I have.
Yeah.
I look around every single day and like, I know I'm blessed. I'm privileged. Mm-hmm. You know, everything I work for, I get, you know, even when it's hard, like even when it's really, really, really fucking hard, like I'm still okay.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I don't think it's necessarily a negative to be passionate and driven and always wanting to seek, you know, the next thing, you know, because I think, you know, we're creatives, you know, and like oftentimes that for me, the next thing is art, you know, it's art. It's like being with my team. It's, you know, what else can I do to share with the world? What else can I do to share with my team? You know, the next thing for me involves so many other people, you know?
No, I really like that. But I also think, with what you're going about your anxiety and things like that. So is that not the case of like where you're at? Like, you're just in another level of working your fucking ass off until it gets to the point where you take on another project.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, I'm already like working on book number two. The 3-year projects, you know.
And then it'll be restaurant number two. And then it'll be something else.
I'm not opening any restaurants for a while.
No.
It's enough. It's a lot. Yeah. I'm happy with Con. I'm like super happy with Con. I'm super happy with the bar.
Nice.
It's going to keep me quite busy for quite some time. I'm like very excited about both. Yeah. So.
No, man.
Look, you calmed me down, Will. You made me just like chill.
Mate, you can call me any day. I'm happy. I'd love to talk to you every day. So I want to go back to the process. I know we're jumping here, there, and everywhere, but you're about to open. Obviously, there's a huge process in staff, and I know I wanted to apply to be a dishwasher at the restaurant for a bit. But how do you pick your staff? Because I think also in your, I don't know if anybody has or anybody that hasn't seen the restaurant or hasn't booked to go book and go or follow them on Instagram, but like your restaurant is like an open kitchen, so people, I don't know, like this is just me being naive and not knowing the kind of process of employing lots of people, but like also I feel like you want to employ people that are like very passionate about working there because they're going to be watched all night long.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel extremely lucky and grateful that I do have such a strong team, especially in the kitchen, great people all around. But yeah, I mean, I've been able to work with people that I've been working with for many years. I've been able to reunite with people I've worked with in the past, and I've been able to meet some new folks that have joined the team, and they're just complete rock stars. They're really passionate about what they do. They're excited about the cuisine. They're excited about the culture. They're excited about pushing and just wanting to be successful and just, you know, just making good food and advancing their careers. And, you know, I think I feel very lucky that I attract that type of person to be teammates, you know. But you know, team is everything, you know. I mean, I think I tell them all the time, you know, like I'm only one piece in this puzzle, you know, and I'm only, you know, one piece of this, you know, this whole entire system, and that I have so much to do, and that I really rely on them to do what they do and what they do best, you know. And I just want to give them the space to do that well and shine.
I get that totally. What is your actual role in the team? Apart from Big Boss Man, which we all know, but like how do you manage the team? How do you keep the team in good morality and all of that
There's different layers of this, you know, the whole group and the system and how it all works. And you know, pretty much, you know, there's different people in leadership of different elements of things, from the pastry chef who's in charge of pastry and she's helping us with things in the morning. Our sous chef who's doing a lot of the ordering and prep, make sure we have a lot of products in house. We work closely together because she works at night as well. There's my chef Aranya, who's really kind of like my right hand person, and she kind of just has a very huge kind of overseeing role in terms of production and staffing, making sure we have enough teammates, making sure we have all the product. You know, in my role, it's like it's a very kind of global role in terms of a final say on food, making sure everything tastes as it should. Just kind of like final say on, you know, just staffing, making sure that, you know, we're talking to people who have concerns or, you know, trying to address issues. What I do is extremely public facing. So, you know, I'm interacting with all of the guests, and just making sure, you know, their experience is great. I'm working with the service team to make sure that, you know, all the service issues and all the service opportunities are handled well, and just making sure generally people are having a great time in the dining room. And then just kind of like dealing with media and handling media and kind of like all those national requests and national eyes, final numbers, final sound budgets, really kind of like the last stop is me in terms of making all the big decisions for the restaurant.
Do you enjoy it?
I do. I mean, I love my job. You know, it's very funny because there was just like one point where it was like the beginning of opening, and I was like, you know, did I make the right decision? Because I was chilling in the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's just, you know, like I was touching on, but prior, you know, there's so many avenues that you can take as a chef. And like, I didn't have to open a restaurant at all. You know, yeah. I could easily do TV and write and appearances around the country. Like I could do that as a full-time job.
Yeah.
And have my own schedule and, you know, travel all the time. But, you know, I wanted to open up a restaurant to help leave a legacy and help set something up for my team. And I don't regret it. I love it. You know, I'm very happy. The restaurant's beautiful and we're doing amazing things.
I think there's also a certain amount of like giving back to the community with a restaurant. Like, I don't think people realize how important restaurants are in the community and how, yes, you could be, I wouldn't call it selfish, but let's just call it selfish and just look after yourself for the rest of your career and just worry about earning as much money as you possibly can and living the life of what you want. But I think there's something about a restaurant that really gives back to the community of Portland, gives back to the community of the people that work for you. It employs people. It gives people time to meet people. It's time to socialize, time to experience amazing food, which I think we've all forgotten that we missed that during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something really special about that is that it's, I don't know, I just really like the concept of it. And I don't think people realize how much hard work goes into it all and goes on behind the scenes for you to open the doors every night or however many days a week you're open. And then people can go and enjoy and eat.
Yeah. Special. No one, the average guest does not understand, nor would they, you know, be expected to understand exactly what it takes behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, when we talk about prices and just the hours, you know, it's extremely expensive to run a restaurant. It takes hours and hours. It's hard to get out of a restaurant shift in under 12 hours. It's like really hard, especially as a chef. You know, it's like a 12 to 14 hour day just to get dinner on the table every single day. And I don't think a lot of folks realize that unless you kind of ask around and, you know, look around a little bit. But yeah, it's really hard work, you know, from, you know, just having to receive the raw ingredients first thing in the morning to, you know, managing, you know, the team that's making everything, making sure everyone's making everything properly, putting the products away, cooking, service, and then going into dinner, you know, it takes a lot.
Are you there from the open?
I get in around like 11 and I leave around 12 to 1.
Yeah. A long day.
1:30. Yeah.
Super long days. So opening day, you get to the point where day one of opening, what's that feeling when you wake up and it's day of opening?
I'm trying to remember this last opening day. So I've done a few big parties in my life and have done a few big things. And it's like that feeling when you wake up in the morning of like excitement and anticipation.
Yeah.
And you just know it's going to be a big day. But you feel ready.
Yeah.
I think that's what that kind of felt like, you know. Maybe it's like, you know, big gig night, you know. You just wake up pumped and ready to go.
I don't know if for me it feels ever, or it, if it really feels like that to me now, because it's, for me, it's like so regular, but like, it's like, I'm not working my whole life to one thing, where I feel you is like opening the restaurant, you're working, you've worked the last 2 years or 4 years or even your whole career to this one point where you're like, wow, like this is day one of a whole new life, really.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, like one thing that like, one perspective I have is that I work so hard for the things that I do. And again, we talked about that level of expectation that, you know, and I just have this high level expectation. So like, I feel like it's like weird, but like a lot of things don't surprise me.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm like, well, I just worked for, you know, we just built this place out for 9 months.
Yeah,
I just had to raise all this money. Like we had to do like all this stuff for like the past 9 months.
Yeah.
So like all the work has been done, you know, so it isn't like this weird, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here.
Yeah.
Because I do believe that I'm here because I've done the work to get here, you know? So that's the other perspective that I have on all this stuff.
How does that feel though for you to say that? Like, cause like, as you're saying that, for anybody listening, you're like, you've got the biggest smile on your face.
I don't want to sound like ungrateful for the things that I have, but like, I feel that like I work really, really, really hard for the things that I have.
Why would you sound ungrateful? Cause you're not, like, you've clearly worked your ass off.
So whenever like, it's like the big day, I just feel there's so much groundwork up to that big day. So it's just like, you're just excited to get going, you know?
It's really interesting that, because I would think like, as an outsider, like, it makes total sense what you've just said, but I would be like, for me, it would be like proper nervous just in case, because you don't know what's going to happen. But realistically, you said it all. You put all the work in to get to that day one where it should be running smooth, and it should be, if all the work you've done is done correctly, then it's, you're good. You're laughing.
Yeah, you're just excited, you know? That drives me a lot, actually.
I think that's big show day for me, is when that's the feeling, when it's like more of an excitement, is like when I'm going to do something that I haven't done before, but I know that I can do it. I think that's the kind of the feeling that I get as well, where it's like, yeah, it's like another day in the office, really. But you've worked your whole life to get to that point, or to do this show, or to do that. That's important. And on top of opening a restaurant, you decided to make a bar.
Yes.
Are we allowed to talk about that yet?
So the bar actually was supposed to be a wine bar. It's a space under the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the team that was supposed to go in there, it didn't work out with them. And the landlord just offered us the space, or had us consider the space, and we just did it. And it's a Pan-Caribbean concept. It's called Sous-Sol, which means basement in Haitian Creole. So
I didn't know that's what it meant. That's amazing.
Yeah. So if you come to Cannes, it's like windows, it's plants, it's white oak, you know, there's a lot of gold trim. And then when you come to Sous-Sol, it's downstairs. You literally go downstairs, and it's just really, really dark, beautiful, cavernous. It's actually a pretty big cavernous space, but you know, this crazy tree wallpaper that has a lot of depth, this huge fuchsia banquette that wraps around the entire space, and just these really great cocktails, and Pan-Caribbean is where the food inspiration is drawn from. So there's doubles, there's beef patties, there's salt cod fritters. So it's really fun. It ties in with Cannes in terms of the cuisine and the culture, but in terms of its function and its design, it's completely different, and it's really cool.
I can't wait to see it.
There's a great little sound system down there, so we can, you know, have a few late nights whenever we want.
We definitely need to throw a party in there.
Absolutely,
definitely.
Absolutely.
I'm actually going to text Ryan after this and be like, okay, let's get on it. because we do need to plan it. Maybe we do like, I don't know, a New Year's Day party.
That'd be epic.
Yeah, because like, I've got an early New Year's Eve show.
Where are you New Year's Eve?
I can't say it yet.
Okay, yeah.
But actually thinking about it, we could, okay. I could bounce out early and then come in New Year's Eve after the show.
And then we could
do a New Year's Day show. Ryan's probably going to hear this on the podcast and be like, dude, you wanted some time off and now you're planning more shows. Sounds amazing. Are you happy?
Yeah, I'm very happy.
Nice, man. That makes me happy.
I'm extremely tired.
Yeah.
I'm like very, very tired, just trying to figure it out. But, you know, I feel like in life, I think Oprah said it once, you can't have everything all at the same time. So, you know, and I know that anything great takes a lot of work. So I'm just pushing through, just trying to sleep when I can, go to the gym when I can. Spend time with my friends when I can, like we're spending time together now. And
yeah,
if the rest of it is work, I know that the work that we're doing is extremely meaningful.
Yeah. Love that. It's,
are you happy?
I am really happy, if I'm honest. Like I've been doing a lot of reflecting recently and I am genuinely really happy. I've had an amazing year. And I'm really lucky with what I've got. There's a lot of work in the like background that's happening, which I'm really excited about. And it's kind of, for me, is like the next step in my career. But yeah, I'm really happy. I'm same as you. I'm absolutely dead. I think in August I slept in my bed like 5 times.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy. But hey, like I guess the way I look back is like 9-year-old Will, when I first started being a DJ, would I ever expect what we're doing now? Would I expect to have the friends I have in this industry in my life? Would I expect to have the family around me? Like all of those things, like, man, I'm fucking lucky, really lucky. So, and that, like, deep down, that only comes from me creating that. Nobody else has done that. I've had a lot of good people around me to help me, but it's down to me. And it's the same for you. Like, none of what you've achieved is due to anybody else. Yes, you've had a lot of people to help you, but it's still you waking up every day and being the driving force of that.
Yeah. I mean, we got to push, but I have a big team around me and I appreciate them, but yeah, every day you got to push.
You have to, man. You have to. And I think it's part of people's nature. And I think that's just, you're just one of those people, right? And we're kind of in that realm of people that just want to just keep working and, and we have an idea and want to make sure that idea is executed to the best of our ability, and if it's not, then it's not done yet and it's not ready to go, and it has to be. But hey, you just, yeah, we have a great life.
We do.
Would you advise anybody to open a restaurant?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot, you know, but, you know, I mean, I say yes because A, it's a place where you can express yourself in a lot of different ways. B, it's a place where you can create a system for other folks to just have work, you know, just being able to employ others, and especially people who are passionate about the industry and they want to be great cooks. They want to be great servers. They want to make great drinks. And I think, see, you know, restaurants are pillars of the community. So, you know, being able to make your mark and be a hub where people can celebrate special occasions, you know, celebrate meals, celebrate the people in their life, you know, that's really the most important thing.
Yeah, I agree. You must see a lot in a restaurant as like as an owner, you must see a lot of people having going through different life experiences. Like, how is that being you're actually like being part of that, I guess?
I mean, I think it's very powerful. Yeah. You know, I think one of the most powerful things that I've seen is actually people from different cultures just finding pieces of certain dishes that make them think of their own culture. And I've seen everything from, you know, obviously, you know, Mexican families to, you know, African families, like West Africa, you know, people from the Philippines, people from China, you know, people from South America, they're all finding something in the food that they relate to. And it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine. The way you allow people to book the dates for the restaurant is a bit different to most restaurants. Can you explain what you do and why you do it? And also, how can people book if they want to?
Yeah. So the reservations for Khan open up the month prior. So on the 2nd of October, all November reservations are going to open. So like that's the first day of November to the last day of November. And on the 2nd of every month, so October 2nd at noon Pacific time, all the reservations go live for November. So that's the process for every single month. Mm-hmm. And I will say that the best seats usually go within an hour. Wow. So if you're not online with your resi open, your card information locked and loaded, ready to go, I will say that the seats go really, really fast. So you just need to plan ahead a month. And
how is that? Because like not many restaurants do this, and I could be wrong. No, I could be wrong.
Actually, yeah, there's actually quite a few restaurants that release reservations per month, you know, and it's not a system where we're trying to make people, you know, fight to get in, but it's just a way for us to manage things as a new restaurant month by month, you know, and just to be able to control what's happening within that month and make sure that, you know, everyone has a great table, and just manage cancellations and additions. So working 4 weeks at a time is just a way for us to ensure that we're getting our systems down.
If you get like a big reviewer or big press or something like that, how does that work in the restaurant game? Do they let you know beforehand? Do they book a table? Like what's the deal with that?
It depends on some cities, like some big cities, I would say like New York or LA. I think there are reviewers that are kind of like less under the radar. Yeah. Basically they come unannounced, you know. I think generally, you know, those type of reviewers, you know, don't want special treatment. They want to experience it just like any other guest, because they want to feel like the chef is doing something special just for them that everyone else won't have. But I feel like there's also a lot of that has changed, you know, like the food writer that is in a wig and a mustache or whatever, like making reservations under different names. A lot of those people have come forward and just become part of the community, you know? And yeah, you feed them, and at the same time, you know, you treat them just like any other guest, because again, you don't want them to feel like they're getting much, much special treatment, you know? But yeah, a lot of, especially with like how open just everything is in the world these days, and how big media is to so many different elements of things. And, you know, there's so many food events that people go to, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, a lot of the food reviewers are public these days.
Yeah.
Just because they work on so much, you know.
Totally, man.
From interviewing you, you know, just talking to share your story. So a lot of them are public.
I think it's important as well. I think it's like, it feels much more real.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's not just about, I think especially these days when it's not just about what's happening at a restaurant and, you know, what the food on the plate is. It's truly about what is the chef's vision, you know, what is the cultural starting point? Like what more is there besides delicious food on a plate? Because there's millions of restaurants that serve delicious food on a plate. And it's really about, you know, the culture, the story behind the cuisine, what's new, what's different. What are they sharing with the world that's unspoken, unseen? To be able to bring all those stories out.
Totally, man. So how can people book to come to the restaurant?
Just follow us at Khan Restaurant on Instagram, on Resy.
How are you spelling Khan? Just for anybody.
Great question. K-A-N-N. Khan means cane, as in sugar cane in Haitian Creole. We are on Resy. And yeah, I mean, those are the khanrestaurant.com is our website. There's tons of information there. And we release reservations 1 month at a time on the second of the month prior.
Are your menus like live or do they change on a regular?
So we have an opening menu that's online right now. And we'll probably do like a small menu change for the fall because we have lots of berries and watermelon on the menu right now. Mm-hmm. And those are going to have to change. But, you know, we're only 6 weeks old. So we're going to keep most of the menu on for a little bit longer just so everyone can get to experience our new signature dishes.
Nice. Nice, man. Dude, let's call it a day. It's your day off, so I want you to go and enjoy it. You don't need to talk to me for this long. thank you so much for coming on. I'm so happy.
Oh, man, my pleasure.
I'm so happy.
What's up with you? Any new music for us? DJ Will Clark?
Oh, man, we were supposed to have new music on Friday, just gone, but the Queen decided to die. So we had to change that because there's no... I'll send you it. I don't think you've actually heard it. I'll send you it.
Okay. All right, I'm down.
But yeah, man, thank you so much for coming on.
It
means
a
lot. I love you, dude. Always a pleasure. Keep safe, and I'll see you very soon, hopefully.
See you soon.
Love you, dude. Take it easy. Bye. Bye. And that's a wrap. Huge love to everybody that's listening. Huge love for Gregory to come in on. I love that podcast. Please hit subscribe. Please give us a review, and see you next time. Keep safe.
Every day, we rise. Challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you're ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.